The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning we are as close to you as your home. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutweiler, newly elected president of our Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you are visiting us today, you will notice in the Zoom chat a link to our virtual visitor card. This is a way for you to connect with us and us with you. Please fill it out at any time during the service. Today, on this July 4th, the 245th anniversary of our nation declaring its independence, Gary Burton will speak to us about the namesake of our fellowship, Thomas Paine, a founding father of our country, whose pamphlet Common Sense sold 500,000 copies in a few months in 1776 and inspired both the language of the Declaration of Independence and the resolve of the American colonies to break from the rule of British monarchy. Thomas Paine's foundational principle of both religion and government was justice. Paine was an abolitionist who railed against slavery. He fought for fair pay for workers. He came to support the concept of a graduated income tax, actually a wealth tax, almost a century before one was implemented. He wrote forcefully against colonialism and monarchies and in support of democracy. Our Unitarian Universalist second principle is belief in justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. This was a belief that Paine held, and his writings influenced people like Theodore Parker, an important Unitarian minister in the 1800s, who helped chart the course of our faith through the arc of the moral, spiritual, and intellectual universe. Paine died on June 8, 1809 in New York City. And Gary Burton will tell us about a letter from Paine written when he was on his deathbed that was just revealed last month. The letter testifies to Paine's focused struggle to awaken the world to the possibility of real democracy, rational existence, and justice implemented. Now, Anne Rostowski will begin our service by lighting our chalice with words from Deborah Frank. I will then light the peace lamp and introduce our gathering song.
Good morning. The chalice is a symbol. A chalice lit in our midst is a symbol of our liberal faith, a faith built on the foundation of freedom, reason, and tolerance, a faith sustained by acts of kindness and justice, a faith that visions a world flourishing with equality for all her people, a faith that demands the living out of goodness, a faith that requires thoughtfulness, a faith of wholeness. This tiny flame is the symbol of the spark of all this within each of us.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Our gathering song today is hymn number 93, To Mercy, Pity, Peace, and Love, performed by our own Christine Perry, accompanied by Isaac Strader. The lyrics are from the poet William Blake, a contemporary of Thomas Paine. The words will appear on slides.
mercy, pity, peace, and love, all pray in their distress. And to those virtues of delight return their thankfulness. Return their thankfulness. For mercy has a human heart, and pity a human face, and love the human form divine, and peace the human dress, and peace the human dress. Then everyone of every clime that prays in deep distress, praise to the human form divine, love, mercy, pity, peace, love, mercy, pity, peace.
This morning, I will be assisted by Corinne and Ryan McNeil in a short conversation through story about Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was born on January 29, 1737 in Thetford, England. His father was a Quaker, his mother an Anglican, and from an early age, he was a religious skeptic and a bit of a rebel. His father was a sailmaker and Thomas apprenticed in his shop from the age of 13, making corset stays. From his father's sailmaking business, Thomas may have had a romanticized idea of the seafaring life. At age 18, he decided that he would become a pirate and signed on with Captain Death to sail on the pirate ship, the Terrible.
Daddy.
It was a terrible idea. He was ready to board the ship when his father arrived at the dock to let him know that wasn't going to happen. And it was a good thing. It turned out that on that very voyage, the Terrible was caught in a storm and sank with no survivors. 2 years later, Paine signed on as a privateer on a ship called the King of Prussia. Not the Mall, that was a ship. And learned that he was prone to seasickness. So the life of a pirate would definitely not have been a good fit for Thomas Paine. Thomas then traveled to London, then moved to Sandwich, England. No, not that Sandwich, Sandwich, England. Thomas eventually returned to Thetford, studied for and passed the exam to be an excise man. That's a tax collector for the crown. He collected money from hardworking people to give to the crown. Thomas eventually, he got a job in Lowe's. Not the home improvement store, Lowe's, England. Collecting excise taxes. He helped organize his colleagues and petition Parliament for higher pay. His reward? He was fired. But he had a friend, Benjamin Franklin, who liked Thomas's moxie and his writing and invited him to come to America. Franklin gave Thomas letters of introduction that he used when he arrived in Philadelphia in November 1774 and eventually established himself as a pamphleteer. The rest, as they say, is history. And now Linda Weaver will read from one of Thomas Paine's letters to citizens of the US. This is from the third letter.
Thank you to Ryan and Corinne and Preston and Manny and Mike. Thanks so much. Okay, here's the letter to citizens of the U.S. Part 3. Thomas Paine left the United States for Europe in 1797, expecting to return the next year. Instead, he became embroiled in conflict with the British Parliament and then in the French Revolution. He was imprisoned in Paris and narrowly escaped the guillotine. He returned to the United States in 1802 and penned several letters to citizens of the US. The first four of these letters were published in the National Intelligencer in Washington, DC in November and December, 1802. In these letters, Paine recounts the arc of his fate in Europe and rails against the treachery of the Federalists in the United States. In the third letter, he wrote, "There is a general and striking difference between the genuine effects of truth itself and the effects of falsehood believed to be truth. Truth is naturally benign, but falsehood believed to be true is always furious. The former delights in serenity, is mild and persuasive, and seeks not the auxiliary aid of invention. The latter sticks at nothing. It has naturally no morals. Every lie is welcome that suits its purpose. It is the innate character of the thing to act in this manner, and the criterion by which it may be known, whether in politics or religion. When anything is attempted to be supported by lying, it is presumptive evidence that the thing so supported is a lie also. The stock on which a lie can be grafted must be of the same species as the graft. If this strikes a chord today, think of it when you hear a liar invoke our founding fathers."
Thank you, Linda. And now we'll have a musical meditation, which was written and performed by Isaac Strader. So you can think on the words of Thomas Paine and prepare yourselves for the sermon. Thank you. It is my pleasure this morning to introduce Gary Burton. Gary is president of the Thomas Paine National Historical Society, associate editor of the Collected Works of Thomas Paine Project, and a member of the Thomas Paine Memorial Committee. I was introduced to Gary by Margaret Downey from the Freethought Society in Philadelphia. And Gary was a keynote speaker for a Thomas Paine Day event held virtually on June 8th, the 212th anniversary of Thomas Paine's death. Gary, the floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Let me get up my notes, okay. I would like to present to you a letter that Thomas Paine wrote on his deathbed, still fighting, he was still lucid, and he's still determined. It's a remarkable piece of American history to share with you on July 4th. It has been a puzzle for historians for decades who wrote this, and I led the team that proved Paine's authorship. The theme of the letter and its importance will become evident, but essentially it brings together his core philosophy on both government and religion. This philosophy is unchanged in his 50 years of writing and organizing. But first, I want to outline his political philosophy, which became the dominant change in world politics in the 18th century and is still dominant today in the forces of progressive change. Paine always spoke of his philosophy as first principles, those inherent, inalienable truths he rested upon and fought for. They include, first and foremost, equality. After that, and based on that, liberty, which follows, because it is rooted in equality, since without equality, liberty is restricted. Thirdly, then, is fraternity. Since we are all equal, there is no basis for inherent strife. These first principles need a proper government, an association of people which reflect these principles. When equality is absent, strife flourishes, and liberty is a restricted privilege. The active component in his first principles is summed up in his use of the term justice, for it combines these first principles into one concept, reflecting all of them at once. He uses it often, and he uses it in conjunction with morality. The term moral justice was the basic argument he used in most of his arguments. Here is a quote from Dissertations on Government that he wrote in 1786, written on the eve of the Constitutional Convention and his departure for Europe. He is summing up what he had been preaching in light of the elitist nature of the coming convention and their rejection of his presence, even though it was Paine who first pushed for a national constitution in 1783, on the basis of his constitutional principles laid down in the summer of 1776. Quote, "The administration of a republic is supposed to be directed by certain fundamental principles of right and justice, from which there cannot, because there ought not to, be any deviation. And whenever any deviation appears, there is a kind of stepping out of the republican principle and an approach toward the despotic one. The public good is to be their object. The foundation principle of public good is justice, and wherever justice is impartially administered, the public good is promoted." End quote. His attempt to influence the convention fell on deaf ears. And likewise, he had this view in religion. In The Age of Reason, he lays down a similar principle in his introduction. "I believe in the equality of man, and I believe that religious duties consist in doing justice, loving mercy, and endeavoring to make our fellow creatures happy." End quote. Again, equality as the basis of justice. And he shows here that the justice represented in the Bible was really revenge, not a standard a religion should be preaching. These first principles are all the principles of what we call democracy. All the people equally participating and directing the government on an equal footing so that a fair and equitable system is maintained. It is also appropriate, however, on July 4th to remind us, as Paine said in Rights of Man, quote, "When it shall be said in any country in the world, my poor are happy, neither ignorance nor distress is to be found among them. My jails are empty of prisoners, my streets of beggars. The aged are not in want, the taxes are not oppressive. The rational world is my friend because I am a friend of its happiness. When these things can be said, then may that country boast of its constitution and its government." Close quote. But as to slavery, the stakes to him were starker and clearer. Paine only wrote anonymously on the question, but all his friends and compatriots, excepting Jefferson, were staunch abolitionists. The basic tenet of linking morality and justice is evidenced in this letter to Jefferson. The letter addressed to President Jefferson was written on November 30th, 1808, and he references that November 30 day in the letter, but from 1781. Why that date is a bit complex, but it was about the time of peace with Britain and Jefferson's notes on Virginia was published. 27 years to the day after that date of November 30, 1781, he memorialized that day with this letter in 1808. The letter was transcribed, probably as he spoke, since the transcriber was his caretaker, Madame Bonneville, whose language was French and she misspelled many common words. It was written as if it was the pen of a slave and so signed a slave. The emotional impact was heightened because of the ruse. Jefferson and Paine had been close since they sat and created the Declaration of Independence. We'll have time in question and answer. I'll stay around to elaborate on that statement. It's a big one. But the struggle with Jefferson's slave ownership was taxing on Paine, and his final composition let loose all the frustration on dealing with the man who had the power to end slavery, but did nothing. I'm going to read to you one paragraph of a 24-page handwritten letter. And remember, this is Paine addressing Jefferson as a slave. Quote, "What your reasons can be for keeping open that execrable market where man shall be bought and sold, which you wrote so warmly against in the year 76 and condemned as a mark of disgrace, of the deepest dye in the Christian king of Great Britain, I cannot conceive. Is a crime of this execrable nature any more criminal in the Christian crown of Britain than in the Christian executive of America? If not, what are your reasons, sir, for suffering us since the 30th of November, 1781, to be trodden underfoot and abused in such an inhuman and brutal manner? Are not our rights as well secured to us by every law of nature's God as any man's in the universe? We think so. Therefore, sir, we consider ourselves entitled to our yearly wages from that very hour, and no man in the government except the tyrant can dispute our demand a single moment. And you may depend on this, sir, that we shall never be reconciled to this government till we get it and our freedom with it. I think, sir, you can't do yourself and your country a greater honor, nor your unfortunate countrymen a greater piece of justice and mercy than by freeing your slaves and paying them their yearly wages from 81 to this day. And then, if any slaveholder in America shall hereafter refuse or neglect so to do, let him or them be made an example of, and their heads be hung in gibbets forever for an everlasting monument, and a terror to tyrants and evildoers. Oh, Thomas, you have had a long nap and spent a great number of years in ease and plenty upon our hard-earned property, while we have been in the meantime smarting under the cowhide and sweating in the fields to raise provision to nurse tyrants, to cut our throat and perpetuate our own bonds. Close quote. The first time in history that reparations were demanded is in this letter, and it was Thomas Paine who wrote it. How we know it was Paine, I will reveal later as well as we have some time. He demanded justice and received silence. This was the final break between the two men, and Jefferson, who must have known who the author was, never responded or acted. You may see the full letter at the Library of Congress online under the Jefferson Papers. Just enter the date of it, November 30th, 1808, and it should come up. So now I'll give you my two-sentence sermon. Paine's moral justice set a standard as yet unlived. The fight for economic justice, civil justice, and human rights justice are constant goals, never quite fully achieved, and without them, democracy will never have a chance to thrive. Thank you.
Wow, I'm almost speechless, Gary. Thank you for your enlightening talk about the namesake of our fellowship. Now we come to the portion of our service where all are invited to share briefly, in a sentence or two, a joy that is filling your heart or a sorrow that is weighing you down. We will have a short musical interlude during which time you can collect your thoughts and raise your virtual hand on Zoom through the raise hand feature in either the reactions tab or the participants tab at the bottom of your screen. John Sayre will provide more detailed instruction for folks on smartphones or tablets following the musical interlude.
Okay, I see no other hands raised, so we will bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will appear on the screen.
And now Anne will extinguish our chalice with words from Maddie Sifantis.
We extinguish this flame, but we keep its light in our hearts. With its message of love and justice, taking it outside these walls to the world we live in until we are together again. And now we will have our closing song. We'll Build a Land. The words are by Barbara Zanotti and the music again by Carolyn McDade. Now this version is a little different. It's performed by Morris McClellan and John and Cynthia Bowling from the Church of Portland Kitsap UU Fellowship. And they added a new verse, so pay attention.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where the forests are fertile, where the water and wind run clean and clear, and community matters more than possessions. Come share this land, let's build it right here. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit,
justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
One more time.
Oh, come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. For justice shall roll. Like an ever-flowing stream, and peace.